Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We're going to be talking today about a subject matter that not too many people want to bring up, because it brings us into what we would describe as the darker areas of the mind. We're going to be talking about a book, A Relentless Hope, Surviving the Storm of Teen Depression. And I have Gary Nelson on the line with me. He is in West Virginia, and he is the author of this book. He is a United Methodist minister who, for more than 30 years, has made the choice of working with teenagers and their families, and he is in West Virginia. Gary, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, Gary, again, this isn't a subject matter most people want to even discuss, and when they do, it's as if they put their hands over their own mind in embarrassment. And I think that this has been a very common positioning of many people, because any aspect of mental illness, in many ways, I think we're still in the dark ages, we are afraid of it. What we don't understand, we run from. Your book is dedicated to all the teens who struggle through the terrible storm of depression and all of those who brave the journey with them, and I'm quoting this directly from your book. Your son, this is about you, about your family, about your son, who is now 28 years of age, a very productive, healthy individual at this time.
Yes.
Gary, with your many years of working with families, when you decided to write this book, what particular buttons were pushed in you? Because you didn't have to write about this. You didn't even have to bring this information about yourself, your family, and your son to the forefront of anybody's knowledge. Why did you want to bring this to the attention of so many people?
Well, it really started several years before I sat down to write the book, because as Tom began to recover and put his life together and get married and move into his adult years, he began to share his story with young people that he would work with or supervise and things of that nature, when he would come across young folks that he could tell were probably going through some similar difficulties. And then I was working as a pastoral counselor in those years as well, and so Tom and I began to talk about his experience, and I said, well, would you mind if I shared your story sometimes with folks I'd be working with? And he gave me permission to do that, and so I began to do that. And what I discovered then was that folks really responded to that. I mean, when we first started into this darkness, my wife and I with Tom, I was working then as a pastoral counselor, and I reached a point where I felt like I'm going to have to tell other parents who are bringing teens to see me that I'm going through this, because maybe they won't want to see me and work with me or have their teen work with me if I'm having this kind of difficulty. And so I began to do that. And every single parent to a person said, if that's what you're going through, then you're exactly the one we want to be working with, because you do really know what's going on. So those kinds of experiences, and then watching as teens would respond when I would share with them some of Tom's story, that began to kind of coalesce, and then, frankly, I reached a point then where it was just something that God said, okay, now it's time, you've got to do this. So I took a sabbatical, and my wife was working as a traveling nurse. We hit the road for 9 months, and I wrote the book.
I found the book very meaningful, and when I say that, I mean that from the heart.
Thank you.
Because I think that when we can tell our stories, when we can acknowledge our fears and our ignorance, and know that this is not going to be like anybody else's experience necessarily. That's why I think support groups are so important. And I think being able to talk to someone that maybe does have the empathy, and I agree with the parents that said, gee whiz, if you're going through this, I want to have someone that understands. I've talked with enough people that will give me quotes out of their books that they've read or they've studied, but they've never walked the walk of a parent. They've never raised a child. They don't know what it's like to sit with someone that is in another fog, and this person is not on drugs. They're not, you know, they're not taking alcohol. I mean, we have so many different issues as parents today that assail us, and we try to be super parents, and we just feel like we're splitting down the middle, which I know you and your wife went through.
One of the things, a sugar cube. Yes, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I couldn't quite hear you. Yes, and part of what was so revealing for my wife and I was that Tom was a model student. I mean, we would go to school and teachers would say, we wish we had 30 just like him. His peers loved him. He had all kinds of friends. He was an honor roll student. He made the National Junior Honor Society. He was an incredible athlete. He was a home run ball hitter, and yet he reached the point where he would not even leave his darkened room, and that was so difficult for people to understand. But, yes, I mean, for us it was, you know, we know this child. We know that we're not perfect parents, but we've been good parents, and yet look at what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was helpful as well in being able to work with other people to help them find some grace, you know, to realize, you know, sure, there are situations for our children that our mishandling of things as parents or our not facing our own issues and things of that nature help to contribute to our children's difficulties. But we're talking about a medical illness here, depression, anxiety, and the related kinds of things that have strong genetic bases and just can come on to children, teens, adults. And, you know, we by nature want to look for a reason, you know. We want to try to figure it out. And sometimes there's not much figuring with these other than just it's happening and what do we do to get through it and find relief and healing and that kind of thing.
Right. And you brought up a point that I think is well taken. One, that when you're dealing with someone, and especially a teenager, they are in the process. They don't have, but they're in the process of learning how to communicate with what is the adult world that they're going to be going into.
Yes.
And this is all chemically related on so many levels. And
yes.
It doesn't mean that they're on drugs.
No.
It does not mean that they're drinking.
No.
It doesn't mean any of that. But there is something that is happening with them physiologically that actually does affect the brain. And it's the same thing in adults. And I think as we become more understanding of body chemistry, and everybody's so different, we'll have more to work with here. You make a statement that depression doesn't always kill, but the illness steals life from the teenagers themselves, their families, and their friends. And that's so very, very true.
Yes.
But I like a point that you bring out. And that is not, and I'm quoting directly from your book,
okay,
not all counselors and other professionals in the mental health field integrate spirituality as part of the helping methodology. Now, this is something that I think more and more people in the medical field are becoming aware of, and it's a whole different level of thinking that you treat the individual, regardless of their age, as a total person.
Yes, I would
mind,
agree.
Mind, body, and spirit.
Absolutely. And yes. As I was going through my clinical training in Boston, that's what, as pastoral counseling students in the program in Boston, we trained alongside clinical psychology students and clinical social work students and things of that nature. So we were in an interdisciplinary environment, and that's what we were starting to discover as the pastoral counseling students, that the psychiatrists working with us, the clinical psychologists working with us, were starting to say, hey, what's this spirituality part all about?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been exciting for me in my career, coming from the pastoral counseling tradition, to see that there is this movement toward understanding that it's not just medical, it's not just psychological, it's not just emotional, and even it's not just spiritual, because we also have to acknowledge that unfortunately, within the religious faith community, there are those who want to see it only as spiritual, and so they will get in the way and even try to keep people from getting the other help they need in addition to the spiritual help in fighting these kinds of medical illnesses.
You have a wonderful story in here about a time when you shared what you were and your wife Patty were going through with your son Tom, and there was a young woman that sent you a thank you card. In fact, she was a young mom,
mm-hmm.
and she had gone through a very, very bad depression period herself, and she said in her family there was a terrible lineage of mental illness and addiction. Now, she knew about this.
Yes.
So somehow or another, perhaps because she was a little older, she wasn't a teenager, but she was a little older, and she said, I need help. And she said, this is what I had to do, and my parents never saw what I went through. They couldn't see because they were so caught up in their own stuff. And you make a statement, if you want to help your children, you'd better face your own demons first.
Exactly. And that's on many different levels. Now, in the particular family that you're talking about, it was a case that the family was so caught in their own probably depression-related illnesses that were being fueled by the addictions and things that they could not see the struggling of their child. But for others, like, for example, as I talk about in my own case in the book, a lot of what I had to face was, and Patty and I both, was our fear. You know, our fear of, oh, no, what's going to happen to our child? Oh, no, is he going to have a life? Oh, no, what are people going to think about us as parents? Oh, no, what are people going to think about me as a counselor if my child's struggling like this? And fear is what drives so much of our irrational behavior, our anger, and all of that gets in the way of our having that really healthy relationship with our child. That gives them something to hang on to, and gives them the healing that they need. I mean, that relationship with our child going through this darkness is I'm convinced one of the most critical factors.
Mm-hmm.
So if I, for example, had not faced my fear and found then in facing it that God was standing there ready to say, you don't need to be afraid. You just need to be faithful. That's what lifted the fear for me, and then I was able to look at my son and say, we're not fighting each other. We're fighting it,
mm-hmm.
this monster that's trying to steal your life. And that cemented our relationship. And it didn't mean that there wasn't a lot of suffering yet. There was, but it didn't get between us.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's significant. That's a very tough accomplishment when there are families, like this young woman I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
where there have been problems with depression. We have some people, we know a few families, where depression runs in the family.
Yes.
And there will be children. We know of one family that has had 4 or 5 children, and only one of them ended up suffering depression.
That's right.
And it was quite an interesting situation, and you don't know why genetically it hits. Both the mother and the father have history of depression in the family. Now, the sad thing is that they really have not been able to find those professionals, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that have been able to work with this young person, and they're still in this fog. They've tried all kinds of medication, and
yeah.
there's been things addressed in such a way that it's not gotten to the core issue.
Okay.
And this young person, they're getting, you know, they're not unlike your son. They're a few years younger than your son. Your son's 28 years old now.
Right.
So they're in their middle 20s, and it's really tough on them because they have not been able to step forth into who they are, and they've been going through this problem ever since they went into puberty, that chemical shift.
Yes.
That hit.
And the tragedy that we discover is that with these kinds of illnesses, some folks respond incredibly well, and there's such hope and healing. But every once in a while, we do come upon situations where folks just, they don't respond to the chemicals, they don't respond to other forms of treatment, and it continues to be a very, very difficult struggle. But folks need to know that most of the time, there's lots of help and hope. There really is.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key.
Yeah.
And the anxiety relationship. Now, all of us go through this. We're talking about situations. Here you have a son who is well-liked. Everybody on the outside looks at him, and any of his peers would say, good gracious, I wish I could be more like Tom. Tom is just such a great guy. I wish I had all of his savvy and his compassion and everything else. But he went into this dark space, and his behavior, his sleep, that's something that you bring out. The erratic sleep patterns. He couldn't sleep.
That's correct, yes. And that seems to be the case for many teens and adults that go through these kinds of things. I mean, what we've learned over the years is that depression and anxiety run together for most people, and sometimes it's hard to say, you know, is it one or is it the other? It's more a combination of it. And for a lot of folks, And we used to watch this with Tom as the evening would wear on, and Patty and I would start to feel tired, and you know, you can feel yourself starting to wind down and say, oh, okay, I need to start thinking about getting ready and going to bed and going to sleep. As we would be feeling that and experiencing that, we would watch him, and it was just like you were feeding him some kind of speed or caffeine, and he would just be going up and getting more and more anxious. And I've seen that with lots of folks over the years that way. It is symptomatic that the anxiety part of it seems to get worse at night for a lot of folks. And then we get into the issues then of it, the depression and anxiety disrupts their sleep pattern by keeping them awake, or maybe they fall asleep and it keeps awakening them. And then they want to sleep and sleep and sleep because they never drop into the REM restful sleep, and then we get into sleep deficit, and so sleep is a critical factor, and we tell folks that it's one of the number one things that folks want to try to address when they're going through these kind of difficulties is talk to your doctor, talk to your professional, your therapist, and look for ways to try to reestablish that healthy sleep pattern, because the better you sleep, the more it will help the depression. And the opposite is true. The worse the depression gets, the more it will throw off the sleep pattern, and the more then the sleep deprivation, the more it makes the depression worse. It's a vicious cycle.
Well, just look at us as average individuals, if there is such a thing as an average person. I haven't met one yet.
No.
But anyway, for people on average, I should say, when they get exhausted, if they just go to sleep and they just crash that way and they rest, they awaken and they're so bright and alert. I mean, that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have that downtime.
Yes.
So the sleep patterns are important. Now, I liked the way you addressed the drug situation, because many times when teens will go through a depression, and sometimes it's a symptomatic, too, of drug addiction, when they do have irregular patterning. But if you note that they are violating your trust, and that's very important, then you have a right to check for the safety of the health. In other words, the parents have to establish parameters, and you did that with Tom.
Yes, we did. I mean, I like to respect the privacy of teenagers for the most part, and that's what I said in the book, is that for the most part, if your teen is living a healthy life, don't go search in their room. Don't try to look for their notes where you're gonna hear or read things that might startle you. But those are years when they're experimenting with a lot of thoughts and ideas. And if you've lived your values with them, they'll come around to those for the most part. But there are occasions, and if you start to see things that alarm you, like in Tom's case, for example. thank God, no, Tom did not turn to drugs and alcohol to self-medicate. But we didn't know, and especially in the beginning stages, what was going on. So there were times when we'd be helping him clean his room, or and that's something that folks often have to do with teens who are going through this, because they just get too overwhelmed. But we would like read a note if we found it or something, and not to pry, but just to try to be aware. And certainly, as I said in the book, if a parent knows and has some pretty good evidence that a teen may be using drugs or alcohol or something like that, then my sense is they have violated a covenant of safety for the house, and they need to know. And that's the critical thing, is the parent shouldn't secretly snoop. The parent should be honest and say to the child, look, you've violated this, and until we reach a point where we can be satisfied that we can trust you again, yeah, we might go through your room to make sure we don't find some kind of illegal drug or alcohol or something else that's going to be harmful for you.
Right, and they really do want the parameters, the boundaries established.
Yes.
They're learning
absolutely.
To be independent. You know, when we think of our world today, if you go back 100 years, they were out having to make a living when they were teenagers.
Yes.
So our world has changed what we call the initiation phase. Mm. But talking about teenagers and the depression they go through, you almost buried your own son. He went through a period, and you found a note that he left.
We did.
And tell us about that.
We were going through some of the worst of times, where Tom was not going to school very much. We were trying to do some homeschooling and things. He had isolated from his friends. We were pretty much his only playmates most of the time. You know, if we could get him to go out and do something, we would try something. And I was trying play therapy with him in terms of model railroading. There were many days that I would just be able to get him to maybe do some railroading with me, and that was just kind of a form of what we'd call occupational therapy. So it was a pretty dark time. And because of this nighttime anxiety, it was not uncommon that Patty and I would go to bed and go to sleep, and Tom might still be up. So one night, we were in our upstairs bedroom, and we were about to fall asleep, and we heard the door in the level before us, which was ground level. We heard the door open and close, which was a pattern, because it meant Tom was letting the dog in before he went to bed that night. So we heard the door, didn't think much about it. The next morning, I got up, and I went downstairs where Tom's bedroom was, in the family room. And Tom was asleep on the couch in the family room, and it was a little unusual. And I noticed at his feet there was a note that said, was folded, and it said, "Read me." So I opened the note, and I began to read it. And as I began to read it, I just began to shake uncontrollably, because the note said, basically, "Last night I left, and I would have been gone forever, except I ran into a pond. And as the ice began to form around me, I decided to come back. So I'm here, but I am now dead to the world. And I will no longer communicate with anyone and tell my best friend that." And I looked in the bathroom that was off from the family room, and sure enough, there was a big pile of wet clothing. So we were scared to death, not only because of that, but also because I had been through suicides with teens and adults, so I knew the reality from that side as well. So yes, it was terrifying.
And I'm sure there are some people listening to the show today that have had experiences with family or friends that have gone through something like this, and it's not something that's easy to talk about to anybody else. It's something that, unless someone is just willing to be a good listener and not be judgmental, which is typically not easy to do for most people, they'll tell you you're a bad parent, or the kids, you know, there's something wrong with the kid or whatever. But it's a real interesting and unique process, because it's not a simple black and white answer.
It's not rational.
No, it isn't rational at all.
Exactly, and that's where we get in so much trouble sometimes, trying to understand, well, why would someone do this? Or because we're in a rational place, and when a person hurts so much that the hurt takes them to this, what I call sometimes an altered state of consciousness, I mean, when it takes them to that place, it's no longer rational.
That is true. That is true. And there's, you know, there's been, I don't know how many studies, but there's so many times where there's so much at the base of something. But in Tom's case, he couldn't even tell you what was at the base. He just didn't know. And you make a comment in your book that nothing ever cured him.
That's correct.
And you italicized cured. You wanted to make sure that that was clearly understood. Nothing cured him. But he came up with some of his own solutions, didn't he?
He did. I wanted people to realize that in Tom's case, there was no magic pill. I mean, yes, there were some medications that we tried, and certainly the Prozac that we tried, the antidepressant, did a miraculous thing in terms of taking away the anger and the split-second rage that the depression would bring. And that really helped us in terms of keeping relationships and things. But Tom was incredibly courageous in what he would do. And I reached a point in it that I finally, as I said before, when I worked through some of my fear and things, I was able to say, look, this is not going to happen. This is not going to work. We're not going to get anywhere if I keep trying to figure out what to do. So finally I looked at him and said, what's your plan? What does your soul tell you is the way through? And yes, one of the most courageous things I remember was when Tom started ninth grade, which was high school for us. We had a 4-year high school. That's when it just really grabbed him around the neck and took him down. And he could not get to school and could not get to school. And finally we said, okay, so what's your plan? What do you think? And he thought about it for a day and he came back and he said, look, he said, here's what I want to do. I want to go back to eighth grade and re-enroll in eighth grade, finish the year there, and get a running start again for the next year. And I was dumbfounded. Here was a child, here was a young man that had finished the eighth grade, not only as an honor roll student, but was inducted into the National Junior Honor Society, telling me he was willing to go back to eighth grade and do that in order to see if it would help him kind of regain his sense of balance and move through this. So that was just one example. I mean, other things were Tom was courageous enough to be able to try a job, and we found that, yes, that was really helpful. There were times when he would just do other things like decide, hey, how about if I drive to this concert and visit a couple of my neighbors that used to live across from us and now live 4 hours away, how about if I try that? Now, you know, this is the boy that wouldn't come out of the dark room and now is thinking, maybe I could take that on. I mean, those were things that we learned to try to get behind and say, okay, if you're willing to try that, you know, we're willing to support that. Let's go for it. And little by little, that's what we found, was that if we emphasized what's your plan, and, you know, we'll support what we feel like we can, and, you know, we'll give a little guidance in that. But when we went from that perspective, eventually that really is what got him through. Learning to kind of take charge of his own self that way and really, really be able then to say, look, this is what I feel like I need. And that gave him ownership then of his goals. And then we began to see little by little then that he would move into life. Now, when I talk about these illnesses stealing life, I mean, yes, Tom lost, you know, most of high school. Getting to do the fun things in high school. And so as he began to come out of this then, I mean, he's like building a life for himself that had been stolen from him before. So we saw miraculous things and do today. And that's, I don't want to give away the ending of the book, but...
Well, I won't either. But your son, I can say this, he's 28 years old. He's married. He has a good life. But the stories and the information that you give Gary in your book, A Relentless Hope, Surviving the Storm of Teen Depression, I think is very well done. What is your website?
The website is www.survivingteendepression.com.
Survivingteendepression.com. Gary, I want to thank you very much
for being
my guest today. This is a very important subject. You have done a wonderful service, I think. So for any of you that would be interested in finding out more about this, if you have a family member, anyone that you know of that could benefit from this man's insight as a father who, along with his wife, went through a great deal of anxiety, and they've put it in the written form. So hopefully it can help you or someone that you love. A Relentless Hope, Surviving the Storm of Teen Depression, Gary Nelson. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna. Blessings.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go away now. More good things to share.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, so here are the telephone numbers to call into, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, you can call in on 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. So all of those numbers are open and available if you would like to call in. And remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And let's go to our first caller for the day. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, dear. Now, you're going to need to speak up. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
My name is Lisa, and I'm calling from Los Angeles, but I'm from Hawaii.
Ooh. Well, if you're in Los Angeles, I'm sure the sun is beaming down on you. And I know the sun always shines in Hawaii.
Yes, it does, and the people are wonderful.
Well, I'm so glad you're enjoying the West Coast, because the Los Angeles area is just a good time. It's a good place to be. It's a place to have good fun, good time, and there's always something that you can find that's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, Lisa, let's get down to business with you, and I do mean business. There is a whole new attitude that you have been developing over the course of the last 3 years. And this has to do with money in your life, lifestyle, and making some plans for some major changes that I believe are evolving during the next 2 years. Now, as I'm watching you, Lisa, I'm seeing you taking little tiny steps regarding saving, how do you want to plan for things, and you're sort of bouncing around like a ping pong ball right now.
Right.
That's not bad. That's not a bad place to be. Because if you don't check out different venues, if you don't check out variables, then you're going to be very unhappy with yourself when you really start moving forward with your decisions. Now, what's interesting is there's been an interest in doing something with real estate, but you backed off of it, and I think you're wise. Because what you're going to find is if you'll deal with saving the money first, just keep putting money into a patterning where you're not going to be penalized for saving it, number one, and two, where it is going to have some type of a good return on it while you are acquiring it and accumulating it. When you're ready to do what you want to do with real estate, it's going to go very smoothly for you. Very, very smoothly for you. Right now, you've got so many emotional issues working in your space that you are feeling a little bit overwhelmed. But this is what I call a stress cycle. It's sort of like going up on a roller coaster. You know how you hear the chain going clank, 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 clank until it gets to the top?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's, whoo, down you go.
Hang on.
Well, that's it. It's just that clank, 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 that consistency of being pulled up until you're in the positioning where you're going over, where you have gone and done all of the effort, and then the momentum is going to carry you from there. So this period right now, the only thing I would encourage you to maintain is your focus on saving and educating yourself. Don't worry about investing or spending on anything. You just go ahead and do the education side, ask questions, pick people's brains, do whatever you can to become aware, and then the rest is going to take care of itself, because when you're ready to get into that mode of momentum, it'll carry you along beautifully, because you'll be prepared. You have a question for me?
Yes, will I be going through with the sale of this property with a fellow by the name of Mitch Mattino, and what is my position with Mr. Leonard Lavin?
All right, now you're asking me two different questions, so we need to have some clarity here. Are both of these individuals involved with this property?
Yes.
All right. What is their positioning with this property? Are you part owner? Is this something you are buying? What is the situation?
Mitch Mattino will be purchasing my property, but I will be extending financing to him over a long period of 10 to 15 years.
All right. This has to be very carefully done. Have you seen an attorney?
I will be consulting an attorney, because this fellow Mitch is also an attorney.
I would not, under any circumstances, sign one document until you have a real estate attorney. You do not just go to an attorney. You go to someone that is really knowledgeable about real estate. And I'm a little edgy about this. I don't think that this man is trying to cheat you. I'm a little edgy, because I think you need to think this through. Your property will sell with him or without him. But what you need to look at is the positioning. This is business. This is not, gee whiz, I'm going to be a nice person, I'm just going to, you know, do this, that, or the other. No way.
Right.
You look at this. This is business. You want to be sure that as an asset, if you are going to be carrying the financing, that you get XYZ dollars down, that you have an out clause for him and also one for yourself. So if he does not honor any agreement, then he can be removed from the premises, etc. You want to look at both the worst case scenario and the best case scenario. And I would make it a shorter term rather than a longer term.
Okay.
In other words, if you had the choice between 10 and 15 years, I would look at a 10-year period.
All right.
So you need to really have someone who is savvy about real estate, because this may not be the best advantage for you. If you're setting it up as a lease with an option to buy, it could be very good for you in some respects. But you have to work out the dollars on this, because you're still going to have costs that you will be responsible for.
Oh, yeah.
And that is something you have to ask yourself about. Is this something that you really want to do?
Yeah, yeah. It involves interest only for 10 years, but there's a lot of costs that's been involved.
No, I don't. I think, hon, you need to sit down with somebody that can give you the pros and cons of doing this.
Okay.
Because I think as an asset, your property value is going to stay fairly stable. It might go up or down a little bit, but it's not going to shift all that much. Your property isn't going to become worth $100 million in 10 years.
Right.
So you need to be able to deal with a factor of inflation on costs. You need to be able to deal with what if something happened to you where you had a major repair, for example, plumbing or something else.
Yeah.
You have to be able to look at these things, and you need someone that understands this. But I think that a 10-year interest only and then a big payment at the end, I don't think that that's going to work for you very well. So you need to talk to someone who's far more skilled than I am.
Okay.
This is business. This is not being Mrs. Nice Person.
Right.
And you need to look at it. You need to look at what your responsibilities are for insurance, taxes, and other things. So this is all something that should be incorporated in there, and you better look at it very carefully. Do not sign any papers until you do.
All right. And what about my obligation to Leonard Lavin, who has a promissory note attached to this home?
Well, it depends on what you're going to do here. Your obligation to him, let's say you had a $50,000 note to him and your home was worth $500,000 and you have these things and you're looking at it. You might be looking at finding an easy way out, but there's no easy way out of this. So you may have to turn over a certain percentage of whatever you get from this person, and that's why I say interest only is not the right way to do this. You really need someone who is knowledgeable here. But keeping the asset, I think, is a good thing. If you're wanting to give the opportunity to someone to buy a home, because I realize how expensive things are in California, that's wonderful. But you must look at this as business. There are other people that would be takers. Don't sign anything until you see an attorney that is knowledgeable, that can really tell you what your liability is, what your situation is, and one of the requirements might be if you're going to make this arrangement, then you have to pay off this other gentleman. You don't know until you sit down with an attorney.
Okay.
All right, Dan?
All right. Very good, Donna. I'm glad that I got to get your enlightenment and your advice and what you've seen. And I'm glad you I got to speak to you today.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you calling in. Be sure and tell your friends about the show, too.
I will. Someone told me about you, and I just happened to be at her home, and she says, let's give her a call.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, Lisa, I so appreciate you calling me, and if you want to find out about guests or anything else, go to my website, which is DelphiInternational.com, and you'll find out about all the people that come up on the show, and we do have real estate specialists to come in, too.
Okay, very good. I will tune in.
All right, dear. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break, so don't go away. I've got some good things to share with you, And if you want to call me, hey, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Siebel's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Siebel and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Now, by the way, for those of you in the state of Washington, I'm going to be doing a class on Saturday the 19th at the Center for Spiritual Living. This is a historical building. It's located at 206 North J Street in downtown Tacoma. Now, we're only doing 4 hours here, and one of those hours is going to be a catered lunch. This is totally interactive. We're going to be talking about mental ecology. We're going to help you jumpstart for the new year, your personal vision, your intuitive skills, and problem solving. Then we're going to be dealing with clarity on your perspectives, the objectives, and what you feel at this point in time is your life purpose. And if you have a question about that, then we're going to be able to deal with that too. Very much interactive. I'm looking forward to doing this. I don't have the opportunity to be involved in classes very often, and this I am really looking forward to. Now, it's only $89 for the seminar, and all you need to do is call 253-383-3151. That's 253-383-3151. We need to know if you're coming. We want to know how much food to prepare, and that's very important. Now, a portion of the seminar fee is going to be going towards the center, because this is a 100-year-old historical building as of this year, and we've had some earthquakes up here in the Pacific Northwest, and so the ceiling on the building is needing to be repaired and some other things. And let's face it, when you get to be 100, you need a facelift. So that's what we're going to be doing. So we invite you to come, and again, it's 253-383-3151, Mental Ecology. Yes. We're thinking green about being productive and being able to make our lives better on so many levels. So join me. I'd love to be able to share with you my knowledge, my understanding, and learn from you as well. And again, Donna Siebel here. And if you want to call in and chat with me today, all you have to do is give me a call at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Here's who we have coming on air with me tomorrow. Jean Shinoda Bolin, Close to the Bone. Jean has been a guest on my show in the past. She has the most wonderful, profound way of communicating, and we're going to be talking about people that deal with major illnesses and the journeys that they go through, the spiritual journeys. And she has the most wonderful way of communicating. And again, the title of the book is Close to the Bone. We're going to have a great time with Jean. Then Renee Jorgensen is going to be our guest, Awakening After Life. Yes, Awakening After Life. We'll be talking with him, and then Dr. Bernie Dahl, I was talking with him this morning. We're going to talk about how you can optimize your life. So during these next 3 days, we have insightful people, each of whom are going to be sharing their wisdom and their gifts of insight with you. And it's going to be a delight having them on the air. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Also 530-876-3222. Do you ever find that sometimes you get odors in your house and or your apartment and you just went, how in the world can I get rid of them? And I don't know about you, and maybe it's just because as I get older, I find that there's a lot of things I'm very sensitive to. I really don't like a lot of the artificial scents that are out there. And I have even been in hotels when they go and they freshen up the room and they change the sheets and everything's nice, and then they go and they spray stuff in the room. And I have had to make requests of maids, please don't use certain things. It's just me. And there are some very popular items out there that supposedly take care of all those strange smells, but there's something that I will have a reaction to. Well, if you really want to do some things and you just don't want to mask odors, here are some suggestions that I came across that I thought were just really, really great. One, deodorize with beeswax. Now, a beeswax candle seems to have a magic about it, that it gives off its own wonderful scent, and it seems to produce negative ions that just negate allergens and toxins in the air. It's absolutely wonderful, and it's not oppressive to sinuses. Also, there are what they call volcanic rock deodorizers. These are really effective. It's absolutely surprising. Now, what they are, they're lava rocks in a mesh sack. Now, it absorbs and neutralizes odors, and you use them again and again and again. They don't wear out. You just recharge them. This is really going to sound strange, but it works. You recharge them by putting them out in the sun. And you can buy these at, you know, home stores, and there's various places on the web. Also, something that we often don't think about, and that is filters for our heating systems. HEPA filters clean the air, but they can cost more than $100 a year to run, plus another $260 for replacement filters. What is going to be better than that? And I know it works in our house, and this is something we have more in the downstairs area of our home rather than upstairs. Plants. That's right. Now, I don't have a lot of time to tend to plants, so the plants I like are the ones that need the least amount of attention possible. But household plants can be philodendrons, gerbera daisies, pop mums. They soak up air pollution right into their leaves and release healthy, clean oxygen. This is the wonderful magic of plants. I have a beautiful, beautiful plant in my office, and it just does wonders. It's just amazing. So when you use living plants, and you have to be the one to decide on what you're most comfortable with, that really works. Healthy ways to keep the fresh air around you. Well, especially, you know, during the winter and spring months when maybe it has to be closed up tightly. It's cool outside and can't quite open up your windows yet and let all the fresh air in. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. It has been a wonderful hour with you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It is always good to be open and receptive to new ideas, and never, ever be afraid to ask for help if you need it. You know, somebody, if they ask for your help, you probably would be there to give it. Don't be afraid to ask it if you need it as well, because there's always going to be someone that will be glad to support you whenever you need it. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Have a fabulous, fabulous day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.